Welcome to MicroCollege. My name is Jacob Hunt. I am the director of Thoreau College. We are a microcollege located in rural southwestern Wisconsin in the Driftless region. If you are listening to this in late 2025, there's still time to check out our website, thoreaucollege.org. We are accepting applications for all of our 2026 programs, including our spring and fall metamorphosis gap semesters, as well as the summer 2026 Driftless Field School program, and as well as classes for the Driftless Folk School and the Viroqua Shakespeare Festival will be happening again in June. Today, our guest on the podcast is Elizabeth Sanders, who is the executive director of the Camp Hill Academy. Camp Hill Academy offers tuition-free higher education in anthroposophic inclusive social development. Her academic work at the intersection of ecology and spirituality in America initially led her to the Camp Hill movement in 2011. In the interim, she has conducted research on public policy and disability services, models of communal living, inclusion in communal contexts, and critical anthroposophic research methodologies alongside her work in Camp Hill. Libby lives in southeastern Pennsylvania with her partner Clayton and their cats. Thank you for joining us, Libby.
Thank you for having me, Jacob. Glad to be here.
I'm really excited about this conversation because, yeah, I've just started to learn more about the Camp Hill Academy. I think there's a lot of really exciting things about it. But first, we want to hear a little bit about you. And here on the podcast, I always ask about where you were between 18 to 21, what you were doing, what were the big impacts and influences on your life?
Okay, so I grew up in Texas, south of Houston, so really on the Gulf Coast. And when I was 18, I went to college also in Texas at the University of Texas. And for some reason, I was very clear, when I was applying to colleges in 11th grade or so, that I wanted to study either religion or ethics. I didn't grow up in a hyper-religious environment, although, Texas has its own, quite interesting spiritual and religious sort of tapestry going on. But I was really convinced of this, that this was sort of my path was religion or ethics. And I'm not really sure where that came from, but that was my guide. And so I knew I was going to go to public school in Texas. And so I found the University of Texas's religious studies program and joined that. So I really spent my college years, 18 to 21, 22. Sort of soaking up as much as I could. And I think what really drew me to, well, I don't know if it drew me to religion, but what always really interested me in religion as a focus of study was the way that we do religion as human beings is really ultimately a question of where our priorities are and how we make meaning out of the world. So religion, as a subject is very broad. It's not strictly, organized religions that you could name, but sort of a religious attitude, religious practice, and all the rest. So at some point in my, collegiate years, I got really invested in, two particular religious sort of themes. I had done work, as a research assistant in Islamic feminism. That was a big area where I was a research assistant. And a lot of my studies really focused on first century Palestine as well. So sort of the origins of both Christianity and modern Judaism, post-temple Judaism. So those had really been my focus up to that point. But in the, right around 21, these two totally different streams of religious practice sort of came up, and I became really invested in them. And one was really American, what's called civic religion or civil religion. So this is the sort of the pageantry of the society and the myth making and the symbolism, and you could almost call it the liturgy of public life, and how those sorts of values are passed on in a very religious sort of way. So I became really interested in how that American civil religion influenced and played with different religious traditions. So, people who practiced, might be coming out of a Jewish background, out of a Hindu background, out of a Catholic background. How does American civic religion sort of interweave with those other spiritualities? And then on the other side, I became really interested in ecology and specifically agriculture as as an aspect of ecology. And so these two sort of streams, I worked on them in different ways. I went and did an internship at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., really looking at this intersection. And then in my thesis, I also, picked up some of these topics in religion and ecology. And so what I really discovered through that period, right around age 21, going into 22, before I was leaving college, was that I really wanted to, my future studies, I really wanted to pick up this question of American spirituality and ecology, or spirituality in America and ecology, you could say, and specifically agriculture. So I got this crazy idea that I was going to, find some for my graduate studies, because I've, was always convinced I was going to be one of those people who was a academic forever. I really decided, okay, my graduate program is going to be religion and ecology, and I'm going to study American agricultural communities. Well, I decided that it would be good, since I'm very academic, I should get some hands-on experience. So why don't I look for some agricultural work to do? So I found through that process, whatever search terms I entered into the AmeriCorps website popped out Camp Hill. And it was, not some big journey. It was really like I put in the search terms, that's what popped out. I said, that sounds good. And I found out after the fact, that there was this whole spiritual foundation to these communities, that it was this whole movement, inclusive community building, this anthroposophical stuff. I didn't know what that was, but I knew there was agriculture. So on upon finding this out, I said, well, perfect. It's my there's my case study, right, that I'm looking for. But so when I then joined Camp Hill, I guess I was around 22 at that point. Yeah, I would say that after maybe several months of being there, I was at a community in upstate New York, Camp Hill Village, Copaic. And I think after a couple of months of being there, I actually had to go back to Texas to go through this interview process for this other program. And I ended up spending the whole interview talking about Camp Hill and talking about what I was doing there. And it became very clear that I had sort of wasted these people's time, having them interview me for this other program, because I sort of walked out and realized, okay, this is the place that I'm really interested in. So I got back on a plane, and I've been with Camp Hill ever since. So.
Wow. Yeah, so that it's striking in that you have sounds like your that young adulthood was an adventure of ideas, right? You were interested in big questions of meaning but from an academic perspective. And actually a lot of the stories that I've heard after 3 and a half years of asking this question have not been that, right? Or
Okay.
occasionally they are, but people get into ideas through experience often. At least people end up doing the kind of things like starting micro colleges and gap year programs. So that's really interesting. Your quest for ideas led you into practice.
Yeah, very much so. And I think what I was, one of the things that really resonated with me with Camp Hill was that I think in an academic environment, you can spend a lot of time and energy trying to understand what meaning is, how we make meaning, and what those sort of the sort of values that we develop and these epistemologies we have, and all the rest. And of course, religion is a sort of core place where that sort of work happens. But what I never really experienced was an opportunity where I could see that meaning making happen consciously, intentionally, and almost as a practice, outside of overt religious communities, of which I was not a member, but a very supportive sort of outsider, guest, so to speak. And so entering into a community like Camp Hill, where there is definitely a spiritual fabric to the community, there's definitely a underlying spiritual foundations, but that developing that fabric is not the primary focus, right? The primary focus is actually creating inclusive community. That was something I hadn't had the chance to experience before, where that meaning making activity was conscious, but was not the primary focus necessarily. It actually was practice that was the focus, and that meaning making existed to serve practice, so to speak. So that I think was what really drew me and made it possible that, for me and for others, even if, your own spiritual identity is not anthroposophy or esoteric Christianity, whatever it may be, that's sort of affiliated with, these anthroposophy and similar streams, you are still able to participate in that activity of meaning making and meaning making in the service of practice. So that was a really exciting sort of thing. So it almost I went on my journey of ideas, and it led me to, Turtle Tree Seed and all the rest.
It strikes me now, especially that the deepening there that you've offered is it is what is sounds familiar to a fair number of the students who come to Thoreau College, right? There we have students who are in the midst of a university career, or they're just graduated, or they who are feeling that they really need to get their hands in the dirt and or engage with community and the sort of things that you can do at a program like ours. So that's fascinating. Yeah, you found that on your own way. So as you've warmed up the set up the situation perfectly for an introduction to what is Camp Hill. People who've listened to the podcast will have heard of Camp Hills a couple times before in the past year or so. If you're curious for more, go back and listen to the interviews with Dr. Dan McKinnon from the Harvard Divinity School, who has written kind of a key text on the Camp Hill movement. He came and shared some of that as a guest instructor here at Thoreau College last spring. Hannah Schwartz, who's the founder of a couple of Camp Hill or Camp Hill inspired communities up in Vermont. In your role there as the executive director of Camp Hill Academy, what is a Camp Hill? What is a Camp Hill movement?
Big questions. So I think the easiest way to describe Camp Hill is that it is a movement of intentional communities. And by intentional communities, I mean that you have a group of people who, by and large, are not related physically, through heredity. So non-family members coming together and deciding to experiment with how to live cooperatively. So intentional communities can take many, many different forms. They may have some very specific mission, like ecological well-being. So the eco-village movement is something that people have a bit more awareness of these days. They may really have other values that they espouse. Some are spiritual or religious communities. You can almost think of a sort of monastery as a type of intentional community. But so too is a hippie commune, and as well as an eco-village, and so on and so forth. So an intentional community is really in the way that we are coming together to try to figure out how could we live differently than what is provided, that we've sort of inherited through our culture and through our sort of typical society. So that can take the form of, what's sometimes called life sharing, where you're actually living in a shared household. Anybody who has, maybe in college lived in a co-op situation might be familiar with this, right? Where, yes, of course, you have your own room, some of your own spaces, but you have meals collectively. You may, do certain, you purchase things collectively. Certain household activities are done together. It's not 10 people living 10 individual lives under the same roof, but really coming together for particular things. In other intentional community movements, you might also have income sharing, where you're not only sharing sort of specific identified costs like food or cleaning supplies, whatever you might need, rent. But even more than that, that individuals who are, either gaining income from jobs they have independently out in the world, or who actually work within the community itself, that those resources are largely pooled. And again, that can happen on many, many different levels, right? You might have a communal pot that you sort of add in some percentage of funds to on a regular basis that can support social needs of, community members as they arise. It may go in a totally other, on the more extreme end, but more, full income sharing, where all of those resources of the individual members are really pooled. So, I just give that to say that there's a really broad spectrum of what an intentional community is, because sometimes people have a picture of one type, or they hear learn about Camp Hill and think that's the form of intentional community. And then they get surprised when there's a lot of different forms.
So just a plug, so Dan McKinnon, we mentioned a minute when he came, he did a week guest teaching stint with us. And the week was exploring intentional community. And we did, it was 5 days, and we talked about Benedictine monasteries. We talked about the transcendentalist and utopian socialist movements of the 19th century. We talked about Camp Hills and Catholic worker houses and farms. And they talked about the hippie communes and eco-villages, which we have some examples in our area. And so that's a common theme that we explore here as an academic topic and experiential topic, while forming a pop-up kind of intentional community with the students. They're living in a housing co-op, and so teaching and practicing and exploring some of the skills and habits that are needed to do that are it's our bread and butter. So it's fun to
It is
have
so good.
Dan's work and some examples near at hand, places like Camp Hills.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also interesting that, you use that example of y'all as like sort of a pop-up intentional community, because the whole question of time is another one. With an intentional community, you can take that word intention and really run with it, right? We're making conscious decisions about how we spend our money, how we're going to live, what we're going to make agreements about, what we're going to leave in the realm of the individual, and what we're going to leave in the realm of the community. Intentional communities also decide when they're going to come into existence. And in theory, at least, they also decide when they are going to die, as a organism, so to speak. Sometimes, of course, things can just peter out. But unlike a sort of organic neighborhood, right, that just gradually grows, at some point in that community's biography, for it to be an intentional community, that sort of conscious decision making happens. And I think so, a lot of people go into it thinking, well, we're establishing this as the sort of utopian model, right? And this is going to last forever. But that's not necessarily the case. There are communities that really come together for a time and then disband. I mean, you could think of Burning Man as a as an intentional community, right? That really comes together and then dissipates. So I like the pop-up phrase. That's a good one. I'll keep that in
And another
mind.
thing that comes about, from Dan's work, and just, you look at all these examples, these are generally communities that have some sort of a religious or spiritual or metaphysical or philosophical kind of underpinning. At the very least, these are people who have examined and are thinking actively about questions of ultimate meaning, purpose, the good life, and in some cases, I mean, specifically when you look at communities like Camp Hills or the Catholic Worker Movement, their ideas of service and of, how do you work towards the higher good for beyond yourself to a whole, to the world.
Definitely. And I think that's one of the things that also really drew me to Camp Hill out of my background, because that whole realm of asking questions about, so what is our ultimate purpose and how should we live out of wrestling with that purpose, and how do we discuss that as a community of people? If you look at, the work of John Cobb Jr., that's the definition of what theology is. It's the debate about, or discussions about, ultimate, questions of ultimate purpose, of ultimate meaning, done, carried out within a particular community of people that has this shared history and is engaging in these debates as part of its identity, these questions of ultimate concern. And so, yeah, I think it would be hard to imagine an intentional community that couldn't actually give you sort of some version of a mission and vision statement, at the very least, that is defining, like, what is the purpose of why we're doing this? What is it we're trying to achieve? And so, from my background, academically, those are theological statements, right? They're statements about what our ultimate concern is, how we're trying to wrestle with that together as this particular group of people for a period of time, right? So anyways, so Camp Hill, in the context of intentional communities in that frame, today is very much, and I'll really focus on the US because that's my area. So when I talk about US, I mean, when I talk about Camp Hill, I'm mostly referencing Camp Hill in the US because Camp Hill is an international movement. So I don't want to mischaracterize how it looks around the world. But really, in the US, the Camp Hill communities that have developed since the early 60s, have really taken on as this core mission inclusive community building. That with people with and without primarily intellectual and developmental disabilities. What that looks like from community to community is very different. But by and large, you have communities mostly with adults. So these are adults with and without intellectual and developmental disabilities that choose to live together or live alongside one another, or even, solely come together for work, volunteering, community service, etc. But most of the communities that are communities of adults still have some degree of, if not shared living, right, with a handful of people living under the same roof. Some network of awareness of the other, right? So it's not just that you happen to have a neighbor, but that we are intentionally neighbors with one another. There are also a handful of schools in the US, or school-aged programs, also transition-age programs. So that's really 14 to 22. And so that's a different kind of community building because you really have the school in the center of a village. So if the village is, the adults that have come together to try to create this healthy and supportive environment, then you have a school program sort of in the heart of that. So you have children, some boarding children, some most, I would say, actually at this point are commuters, right? They come on the bus in the morning and they have school, but it's within the context of an intentional community. So many of the Camp Hill communities in the US are rural and agricultural. There is quite a lot of biodynamic activity that happens, biodynamic agriculture that happens within Camp Hill communities in the United States. I mentioned earlier turtle tree seed, which is a heirloom organic seed company that is run out of Camp Hill Village, Copaic. So I worked there, supporting the seed shop for a year or two. We also have here in Pennsylvania, Camp Hill Village, Kimberton Hills has a very active dairy and has also a really rich history with biodynamic agricultural training. So Dan McCannon, who you mentioned earlier, before his Camp Hill book, he wrote a book about biodynamic agriculture and, the organic movement. And yeah, Camp Hill Village, Kimberton Hills features quite prominently in that text with the development of both biodynamic and organic agriculture and the whole CSA movement here in the United States, through Pfeiffer. So that's quite a history that we have connected. So between the sort of agricultural work, education, when it's in a school setting, there's also within Camp Hills, yeah, this real dedication to craft, as well as the arts, I would say, are very prominent within Camp Hill communities. So, for instance, up there in upstate New York, Camp Hill Hudson has this, I mean, just phenomenal theater program. And they do a lot of multimedia. They've recorded some of their plays and they're available to view. So, real intense, beautiful, poignant, funny, biography work happens through these performances. And they're just so innovative and quite, yeah, quite a thing to behold. The actual event of it is amazing. And they
Camp
perform
Hill.
those for the community of Hudson, not just the Camp Hill community, but the town itself and around. They've traveled as well. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, Camp Hill Hudson is distinctive in really it is embedded in the town, right? It's not in a rural environment comparatively to some of the others.
Exactly.
Yeah, because even people who've heard about Camp Hill villages might have that it's a farm kind of a picture, but it's
That's
not all
right.
of them, right? There, that which is important to know.
Yeah, you've got communities like, Hudson being one of them where there's one life sharing house, so where five or six people live together with and without disabilities. Live together in sort of a shared household, and then you have most of the rest of the community is folks that live in their own apartments. But they are, like I said, intentional neighbors with each other. And then creating that community that is, if you think of community sort of as you're weaving it in, they're sort of weaving that within a tapestry that already exists, that is the tapestry of the city of Hudson. And they're adding these threads in. And what's really beautiful about, what happens in that sort of situation where this intentional community is being created within an existing, sort of natural community, you could say, is that people from that broader community, then they sort of get picked up along the way and they start to interweave with it in ways that you couldn't have really predicted. And so it really is quite a, Catholic Worker, I think, would be another example of that sort of model of intentional community. It's not rural or sort of separate as its own thing. It's really part of, the city landscape, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, Thoreau College has a lot of those aspects as well. We are embedded in our little community, and much of the richness comes from incidental and engineered kind of just interactions with people who are like outside of Thoreau College, and it's really a pleasure to witness those happen and to facilitate them.
That's
So
cool.
cool. Great. So that's what a camp bill is, and thank you for that refresher. And if people are interested in that, there's a lot of resources out there, including our couple of past interviews. So within this context, I'm really excited to have you explain the Camp Hill Academy, which I think is it's a really remarkable opportunity for people with an interest in curative education, in agriculture, in intentional community, and just in a meaningful and a tuition-free higher education experience. So, yeah, just what's the can you tell us what in the most basic level is Camp Hill Academy?
Sure. So Camp Hill Academy is really it's a training program, a college level training program in you could say that the fields of practice of the Camp Hill movement, primarily that's curative or therapeutic education. Social therapy and social agriculture and biodynamics. And these training programs happen, they take place within Camp Hill communities. So they're totally embedded in the life and practice of Camp Hill communities. And our students are primarily, but not exclusively, residential members of those communities. But even folks who are not residential members of their communities, who might be, employees or commuters from the local community, regardless of whether you're in that position or, a residential, real communitarian, so to speak, those communities are the supporters of the education. So you as an individual do not pay for that education. It's really run on a fellowship model. So the community supports you to participate in the training. And they're rigorous, they are full-time academic college-level training programs. We're accredited and also our courses are recognized for through a branch of the University of the State of New York Board of Regents. Our coursework is recognized for what's known as college credit equivalencies. So while we don't issue degrees, we don't issue bachelor's degrees and things like this, you can take, your Camp Hill Academy transcript and have those credits and that coursework recognized by, your Penn State, your Prescott College, whatever it may be, as transfer credit. And so, yeah, being able to provide tuition-free college credits in this country
Yeah.
is pretty special and something we take a lot of pride in. And I would say the other piece of it that I, personally take a lot of pride in and I'm really committed to is that this is also a training that is oriented towards whether working with children or adults or in different contexts, creating the conditions for inclusion. And that often comes in the form of what, outside of community life would be, known as really direct support. And that is not a pathway that is, it's not funded enough in our country. There's not enough training offered to people who go into that field. Not for lack of trying on the part of the people, working in this field of really disability supports or on the, or on the part of agencies, but really just on the part of public funding priorities. And so the fact that we're offering a training in a field that is often not recognized at the collegiate level and in activities that are, including care and care work, which is often not recognized on a collegiate level or on a professional level at all, in many cases, sort of ordinary care. And we're able to do that without charging students tuition. Those two things together are yeah, real. It's a real honor to be able to be involved with a program like this. So students in the program, they're really members of their community. And so the coursework is integrated with community life. People do actually go to sort of classroom-based courses, but that's also woven into sort of the community rhythms. And the coursework is really split into, I would say, sort of three categories. One category is in what you could call sort of professional studies. So the professional practice of inclusive social development. So that may be support for children with disabilities, creating intentional, inclusive community with adults, different workplace inclusion, all the rest. So there's the sort of professional studies pillar of the coursework. Then there's another pillar, which I think would be pretty unique to Camp Hill and our programming, as well as Thoreau and other pop-up communities, is really community studies. So how are you building intentional community? How are you cooperating with others? And how are you, doing that work of discernment of what are our values and how do we create forms that really uplift those values, whether those are values of, cultural inclusivity and co-creation, ecological values, whatever they may be. And then the third pillar of, or the third bucket of our coursework is really what I refer to, again, coming out of a theological perspective, as individual formation. So sort of the classic liberal arts, right? What does, the philosophy, the Shakespeare, the craft, all of these activities, that well-rounded liberal arts, humanistic education, what does that do for you as a person? So I think these three areas of the professional side, the sort of almost vocation, but not in the sense of vocational training, but in this, philosophical sense of the vocation, the community, and then the individual formation. Sort of, it's those three areas that ideally are balanced, within the program and within practitioners in our field of work, which I just refer to as social artists, because practitioner of inclusive social development is too much of a mouthful.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's a very comprehensive vision. I want to just underline a couple things here, or to add a couple things that are make this program remarkable. One is that this is in addition to being an accredited program, you could do a complete bachelor's degree. You could achieve that through this process. You also is also accessible to international students, which many of the gap year programs or micro colleges, things like this are not in the same way. And it's especially as a with the tuition piece of it can be now very expensive for international students. So and there are that seems to be an important cohort, or historically has been, as at Cap Hill Academy, people from Europe and people from Africa and elsewhere in the world who have participated in these programs. Yeah, and the other thing just to underline is these skills that you're describing, these, whether it's ecological, ecologically aware agriculture, but especially these caring social artists, caring for people with disabilities, living in community with people, through long periods of time. These are critically, crucially, like, needed skills, and ones that can't be done by robots very well.
We learned that in the pandemic, very clearly that, which I mean, folks involved in care knew beforehand, but you can't do this sort of care work remotely. You cannot, turn it into a program. It actually requires human beings being in touch with each other.
Yeah, so it seems to me it is the ability to offer this, tuition free to people from all over the world. at dispersed locations around the country. But these are things people are wondering. What is the role of human beings in this era of technology that we're entering? And also with an aging population and with with the population of people with disabilities of different kinds. Like this is these are going to be really crucial people in the world, people who can experience like this.
I mean, I think that's, if you go to a liberal arts program, at your commencement ceremony, inevitably the person that they have pulled to give the commencement address is going to reassure all the parents there that you can do anything with a liberal arts education. Don't worry if your child studied religion, which is totally useless, because maybe they'll be a good administrator one day, right? Or maybe they'll be good at writing grants, right? Don't worry. You can do anything with a liberal arts education. I think people have sort of woken up to that idea, first as a, okay, I'm not buying it anymore, and thought, all right, we don't need all of this sort of study and reflection and all the rest. What I really need to do is just train in very concrete, practical skills related to accounting or whatever it may be, management, so on. Coding, for instance. And then on the other side, there are people who have really taken that and said, well, what if we took that a bit more seriously? That actually this kind of embodied, artistic, small scale, collaborative education, really the ideal of sort of a liberal arts education. What if it did actually prepare you to meet the needs of the world in in creative ways? And I think we're in a place, we as sort of the Camp Hill movement in the US at least, I think we're in a place where we're recognizing, well, there's definitely something to, right, having these really concrete skills. There's definitely something to, something you can say for needing to develop, basic competencies in the practical realities of the world, because that gives you a degree of freedom and possibility when that is not available. And I think that's a perspective also that I've developed in a different sort of way through my experience in Camp Hill, is actually by having some of these just bare bones practical life skills, you really do set people up for the possibility that they can chart their own path and not be someone who can only thrive in a particular environment. So I will say that for the folks who say, ah, let's get rid of all this liberal arts education and just teach people how to balance, balance their checkbooks. I absolutely think we need to learn how to balance our checkbooks. That being said, I think the reality is that more and more of those sorts of skills that, my generation, certainly my parents' generation, really worried about us developing, the world is changing so rapidly right in front of us, that we actually do have to look back into this whole theory behind liberal arts education, to really prepare people for a rapidly changing and destabilizing world, and where that then has directly impacted the way that human beings can relate to each other, the way that human beings can relate to themselves, and the way that we can relate to the earth. Those are skills. They're not just, nice experiences. Being able to use color and form and imagery and poetry and storytelling they're not just entertainment. And there's nothing wrong with entertainment. That's also what sort of life is for, is making things joyful and beautiful, right? For everyone.
I just want
But they're
to
also concrete skills, yeah, that we need.
people who've had the pleasure of visiting a Camp Hill or a Camp Hill inspired community, they experience beauty and joy.
Yeah.
They are some of the most warm and welcoming and just vibrant places that I've visited. And I think that to be embracing that as a college student, even if you don't go on to
Yeah.
do anything like that, is I think a really unique opportunity. And yeah, those are skills that are transferable, whether you're working with people with disabilities or not. You're working with
Absolutely.
people, right? And with the world. So
Yeah.
not just the different materials, but also just time and space. A
Absolutely.
festival, a daily rhythm, a meal time, those sorts of things are the things that do need to be taught in some way.
Yeah.
So maybe before we get too far here, I wanted to fill out some of the picture of the nuts and bolts of being a Camp Hill Academy student. So first of
Sure.
all, where do these your the Camp Hill Academy students, where are they around the country?
Sure. So we have students on the West Coast. There's a Camp Hill community in SoCal, California, that's outside of Santa Cruz. So we have a campus there. The rest of our programs are all on the East Coast. So here in southeastern Pennsylvania, we have a couple of Camp Hill communities, depending on whether your interest is working with children, adults, or in agriculture. We have a couple of programs down here between the Camp Hill School, as well as Camp Hill Village, Kimberton Hills, that covers those different focuses. And then the third big campus community, I call them, is in Copake, New York. But there are other, both Camp Hill and non-Camp Hill, similar sort of communities and organizations all up in that sort of tri-state area between New York, Massachusetts, and even Connecticut, that can all sort of attend classes there in Copake as part of the Academy program. And then we also have campuses in Vermont at Heartbeat Life Sharing, where Hannah Schwartz, who was a previous guest here on the Micro College Podcast, had founded that community, gosh, 20 years ago, must be now. And then Plowshare Farm, which is in New Hampshire, is another one of our campus communities.
Great. So, Camp Hill Academy student would, they kind of embed in one of these communities. They really are. They're taking up, residence with one of the households, which are, again, these are households that are, they're people with or without disabilities. People, usually a family of some kind with kids, maybe sometimes, and then several people, adults who are long-term residents. And then, so this program, you'd really do the full course of it. It would be 5 years. Is that correct?
Currently, I mean, I think the main program that folks do is actually our 3-year program. So we currently have a 1-year, 3-year, and 5-year program. The 1-year program is really a foundation studies course. So you get a lot of art, sort of an introduction to Camp Hill life, introduction to community building, to inclusive social development, and sort of a basic grounding in anthroposophy as well, because that is the sort of philosophical foundation of the communities and of our approach. And then, building on that 1-year program is the 3-year program, which really gives I would say, a strong grounding in more sort of the applied studies. So if you take this, start at this foundation level, you then, have through that developed these experiences, you've, gone through a change and transformation process. And all of that is gonna, ripple out into your future work as this sort of anchor experience. Whereas going into that 3-year program, you're now building on that sort of formation you've gone through and said, okay, now how do I apply this through this particular vocational path, professional path of whether that's special needs education, or community building inclusively with adults or in the agricultural realm as well. So now you're really stepping into that role of wrestling with how do you apply that in practice? What does it really look like? The 5-year program, that's sort of an advanced diploma program, is really going quite deeply to say this is sort of the path of work that I am going to pursue, at least for a time. So you're stepping into roles of more responsibility. And also, yeah, you're really called upon as a colleague, not only sort of supporting your particular community in which you might be studying, but I would say sort of the work of the movement, the work, the field of inclusive social development, beyond your own place as well. So they have a little bit of a different focus, and it's something that people very rarely does anybody come with the intention that they end up doing, right? So you often say, I'm coming for 1 year. I just want to have an experience, this sort of rich artistic experience, community experience. And then, I don't know, 20 years later, here I am still talking about it, right? Like the interview that I fumbled the first time around when I first came to Camp Hill. I'm still doing the same thing 20 years later. And then you have folks who, really intend, oh, I want to get into this field of practice as a special educator or whatever it may be. And then through the experience, they discover something totally different. We had a student a couple years ago who she had done a training in music and really wanted to continue that as sort of her pathway, but she found Camp Hill as sort of a service opportunity. And it was through her experience, and she went ended up doing this 3-year program, that she discovered, actually, I want to pursue this thing of being a Waldorf teacher. It was nowhere on her radar, but she really discovered that through the program. And so she went off and completed her sort of capstone internship, at a Waldorf school, and really stepped into that pathway. So I think it gives a broad sort of stepping stone for what direction you might go in, because all of the sort of experiences, whether it's that sort of intense study or artistic work or trying to do things with people in the social realm, they're really things that, regardless of whether, you're in a Camp Hill community, are just absolute essentials for life. And even if you don't end up working with people at all, just the ability to relate to yourself in a healthy way, maintain your own rhythms, do that sort of self-reflection, check in with how am I actually responding to this or that situation I'm encountering. All of those are just they're essential tools just for life. And I think more so, increasingly so.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, more and more, all education is therapeutic education, and all just every meeting is a is a is has that some of that aspect. We need to care for each other. So I think the rhythm of life is very strong. Rhythm is a really important part of a, I know, of a Camp Hill community, and there's a distinctive rhythm with these the people doing the Camp Hill Academy, right? So there's it's a my understanding is that there's a day a week, like a, 4 days of life in the community doing whatever the jobs are, whether it's agriculture or other things. And there is a day, devoted to study, and then some retreats and things like that. So it's kind of mixed into the schedule.
That's right. So each community has sort of its own rhythm. But by and large, folks, the practica are a really core part of the program, and people do receive, college credit equivalencies for that practica. It's at a collegiate level, so that sort of life in the community is really largely under the umbrella of the practica. Then you have coursework, which typically happens either 1 or 2 days of the week. It might be, one full day, it might be 2 half days. In some places, it might be scattered actually over 3 days a week, sort of a more traditional college kind of schedule. And then there are, I mean, everybody gets, time off, during the week and vacations and all the rest, but we do also have a rhythm of retreats. And those are a really important piece of the program where the sort of student cohort actually retreats from regular life for several days and can really dive quite deeply into topics. And those are really, they're not workshops, they're not, you're going to study X topic for 3 days and walk away with, a certificate in accounting or something, but rather they're these sort of formative processes where you're really building relationships with your fellow students and deepening your own, sort of self-knowledge and connection to, your sort of questions of ultimate concern, I would put it. And so those are a really special experience. So I think between the three, you also have this sort of Waldorf image of kind of head, heart, and hands, right? You have the sort of classroom-based experiences, which are not all, strictly academic, intellectual. You have your art classes and all the rest, and even the intellectual classes we try to make fun. They're experiential across the board, a lot of dialogue. But you've got your classroom-based clear study, right? So you've got your head stuff, you've got your heart work, through the retreats, through participation in community life that's beyond the sort of supervised guidance of a practica format, community festivals, the rhythm of the year, all of those sorts of experiences. And then the retreats are really also a big part of that. And then you've got the hands, right? You've got that practica experience of on a daily basis, you are in life and you are sort of really in the picture of almost this apprenticeship sort of pathway of developing a skill or a trade. We're developing, these skills in life and in community building. And so you can go to become an apprentice of woodworking, you can go to become an apprentice of blacksmithing, you can go to become an apprentice of ordinary life. And I think that's really what we're aiming for, right? Is what does it mean to take the art, the craft of living together and elevate that into a real pathway of development? So having that balance through a week, through, a season and over the course of the year is really important. I think the other element that just for the picture of what the program looks like on the ground is that students really participate as a cohort. So you're not sort of looking at a catalog of courses and picking one or the other here and there. That is an option for people, part-time or auditing, but most of the folks enrolled in the inclusive social development programs are really doing that full time. So you have this cohort that comes together. They're very international. So you will definitely have, folks from around the world who have totally different, life experiences than you would have had, coming together, relatively small class sizes. Our biggest groups are maybe 15, and smaller. So they're intimate and you really build those connections. So you're learning, this sort of inclusive community practice, not just in theory in the classroom and not just in practice in your practicum, but you're doing it practically in the classroom as well. Because you're saying, okay, we've got this group of people who have totally different expectations, different backgrounds, different future goals, we're all here for different reasons. And we're actually trying to go through this process together. So that's a, lived experience, lived praxis of inclusive community building, even within the student cohort that happens. And so that cohort then will go along throughout the whole program. So I have I am an alumni of the Academy program as well. I went through the whole program, so I have my cohort, that I still know. And if you talk to people who went through the program, they know everybody who was in, their year. We refer to it as my year. So that's also another really special experience. So, folks who are, 19 to late 20s. Sometimes we have older students as well, which is really nice. It's a very special experience to have that sort of learning environment. I certainly had not experienced a learning environment like that until I was a student in the program.
Yeah. So how many of the people who go through these programs in different lengths stay in the Camp Hill movement, end up living and spending more time in Camp Hills?
That is a hard question to answer. And this goes to one of our big challenges, which is actually, doing this sort of quantitative, almost data collection. What we do know is that typically folks who go through the first year of the program, because most people are intending to, really do 1 year, and it's also designed really as a cohesive 1 year program. About little more than half, 55 to 60% of people who go through that foundation studies program end up staying longer. So that may be for an additional year, that may be for an additional 5 to 10 years. It really depends. Beyond that level, I think the more of that education you go into, the sort of longer someone's tenure in community life will be. So it could be anywhere from, 3 to, I would say, 10 years that, people will spend in community life. I think one big piece of that also the reason it's hard for me to give exact numbers is because we also have this phenomenon where people move from one Camp Hill community to another. I was a transplant, from one community to another halfway through my Academy journey. And that's a pretty common thing within Camp Hill. It's also, I think it's a pretty common thing within the whole anthroposophic movement. So we'll have people move from one Camp Hill community to another, from a Camp Hill to a Waldorf school, from a Camp Hill to a Bannerman farm, whatever it may be, within the anthroposophic movement. And then we have a lot of folks who, Camp Hill and anthroposophy is not their long-term pathway, by any means, but they, go on to do totally different things. So that's also something that we hope that, this experience they've been through has been meaningful. But there is a degree of tenure that I think the longer you're around, the longer on the other end of the program you often end up staying. And that's something that I think maybe is, the audience of this conversation might not be super aware of, is that in the world of disability services and supports, which, while Camp Hill is definitely a community building movement, it is also, part of the realm of service provision, quote unquote, right? We interact with that world. Turnover is measured in months, not in years, right? In this field. And so the fact that we sometimes say, like, oh, they were only here for 7 years is like, I mean, if you heard anybody else, and if anybody else from sort of the broader world of human services heard that, they'd say, what? That's amazing that you don't have people, you're not measuring that in months, but you're measuring it in years, if not, that decade threshold. So it's quite, I mean, it says something to, I think, the quality of relationships and the depth of relationships that you can really build when You're coming in with an intention not just to, provide service, but to do that in and through community building. It just provides a different kind of resilience, I think.
Yeah, you're not just training someone for a job, right? It's a real holistic approach to life. Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour here, or past it, and yeah, thank you for introducing us to all of this. Yeah, definitely encourage people to check it out. It's a really, I think, a remarkable opportunity, and just yeah, more people need to know about the Camp Hills in general. I think they're just gems, yeah, and thank you for your leadership,
Thank
really.
you. Thank you. Sorry, I sort of fumble around. It's my first interview. I have to say
Right,
that. It's
you
my first
killed
interview. Very exciting.
it. Perfect.
Can I give just one plug? So the Academy also inherited from some of our colleagues in the UK a sort of collection of research on Camp Hill communities, but also intentional communities broadly, and sort of anthroposophic approaches to inclusive social development writ large. And so we've been sort of shepherding that, stewarding that since. And we have a website that's the Camp Hill Research Network, where, so you might be interested in the programs, as a prospective student or just somebody who's interested in these sorts of micro college alternative educational paths. But for folks who might be interested in intentional community or in, holistic approaches to disability and community building and inclusive communities and all the rest, the Camp Hill Research Network might be an interesting resource for people. So we have sort of collection when we're always trying to collect more, particularly English language academic work, as well as we have a lot of videos on that site. We hosted a series of research symposia. So there's a lot of presenters who have spoken about questions that some of it is Camp Hill specific research. Others are, projects that are relevant for folks who are trying to build, sustainable alternative, communal approaches to the world's issues. So even if you're not interested in Camp Hill per se, or, the specifics of the Academy program, I feel like folks who are taking the time to listen to a podcast like this would be interested in some of the research that we've gathered there, because
Totally.
it's really trying to establish a basis for, alternative approaches. So just a little plug.
Yeah, definitely. We'll put a link to that in the notes for the show. Can you say the name again, though? The website is
It's a Camp Hill Research Network.
Camp Hill Research Network. Yes, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been fun.